have you ever thought, if I could just make it on TV, that'd be the big break that I need to make it as a speaker? Well, if so, our guest today knows that you are in for a rude awakening. Hi, I'm Brian Oles, and welcome back to another episode of the Black Speakers Network podcast, the number one show for inspiring the next generation of Black professional speakers. And in this episode, the difference between PR and advertising, I sit down with public relations expert Pam Perry. Pam is an award-winning communications professional. She has been called by Publishers Weekly a PR guru, has been featured in many publications, including more than 100 radio and television programs. She's spent over 20 years in this career and has focused her expertise on marketing, public relations, journalism, right in her hometown of Detroit, Michigan. She is also the publisher of Speakers Magazine, which, by the way, if you didn't know, is the official magazine of Black Speakers Network. And through our conversation, you're going to learn about the distinction and relationship between public relations, advertising, and marketing. And we're also going to dive into the common pitfalls that many new as well as experienced speakers face when thinking about your PR efforts. And so sit back, grab your notes, and join me for this powerful conversation with Pam Perry, the difference between PR and advertising, right here on the Black Speakers Network podcast. Let's go. All right. So I am here with the one and only Pam Perry. Detroit, Michigan is in the building. Founder and publisher of Speakers Magazine and so many other brands. We'll get into that. But Pam, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just so excited to be here. This is long overdue doing this podcast, Black Speakers Network. Obviously, we speak, so we want to talk. So this is good. I'm glad.
Yeah. Well, I think episode 11 that you're going to be on. And I think I agree. I think I recorded the very first episode in 2020, like early 2020. And it was just a matter of getting the right pieces into place in order to facilitate it. Cause I was like, I'm not going to be the person editing episodes. I'm not going to be the person writing show notes. I'm not going to be the person creating graphics. I'm not going to be the person
Yeah.
So it's a whole thing. And even for something that's audio only, and we were just talking about that, the number of steps involved, but I'm so happy that, that is out and that, I really want to make sure that our OG partners and our OG BSN speakers were within like those first like 20 or so episodes. So I'm excited that you're here.
Thank you. I remember the first time that we talked and it was like, oh my God, I have met my soulmate.
Yeah.
We get each other. It was like, we are all about just really helping Black speakers get out there and get known, get professional, get polished, get promoted. It's just time. And it was time before the Black Lives Matter movement even started, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I remember during that time, I was still working in corporate and I remember I started Black Speakers Network and I had a handful of people. It never comes up anymore. But in 2016 and 17, when we were first getting rolling, I would get the question sometimes, well, why I gotta be Black, you know? And it's like, and you know, what's funny. I there's so many organizations that are, you know, stood up in the name of creating a diverse, you know, pipeline of, you know, talent for whatever industry and STEM. You have places like NSBE, you have Society of Women Engineers, you have Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers, which I'm actually a lifetime member of because of my previous employer. So like I am a member of the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers. I'm not Hispanic, in case y'all can't tell. Y'all can't see this, it's a podcast, but I am not Hispanic, nor am I an engineer. I started going to engineering school, couldn't make it past calculus too. And so it's so interesting how we see things apply to one industry, but then it comes to another industry and it's like, well, why is that necessary? And I think it's self-evident now. And Pam, you've done so much for me, you've been a champion of Black voices in media for decades.
Yeah, so it is important. Our voices need to be told. I mean, we can go way back to the Afro-American, right? Back in the 1800s, it was a Black newspaper
right here
there.
In Baltimore.
Yes, right. That was like one of the first Black newspapers. And so it's just always been important that we have our own perspective, and not that we are trying to segregate, but we're just really trying to elevate and amplify. And so when you want to get into a magazine like a national magazine, they tend to look at quote unquote mainstream audiences, and they don't look at the quote unquote the brown community or the Black and brown community. So they're forced to have their own Hispanic whatever and the Black whatever. And then that way they can feel that they're saying the things that they need to see for their culture, for their community. And that's really why. It's not like we're putting shade against anyone else, but it's something to always be in a room and feel invisible. And I don't think, unless you've been there, they won't know what that's like to feel invisible, to go to a conference and you're one of the few and you just feel invisible. So obviously in Black Speakers Network, that is not something that people are going to feel
at all.
We are all out here. We are all Black. And so, you know, we have things in common that we can talk about, and Black people speak different. We do. We speak different. We have more soul. We have more hurt and pain from generations of things that have happened to our families generations back, but we have more soul. We have more emotions, more pizzazz, I think, when we speak versus like someone that's like a part of another group, you know, where it's very good, but it's very vanilla.
I call it swagger. Like, I think in general, we got the, and I went to a HBCU, Morgan State University. And so, all you got to do is step on a yard in any given day and you see, but it's true. Like, you look across all industries, and again, not to take anything away from any other cultural background, but it's like, when you look across entertainment, art, fashion, sports, like how our influence just permeates across those different things. And, you know, we're imitated, you know, around the world. And I think it's kind of a weird contradiction when we're imitated in so many different forms, but yet we're not celebrated.
Corporate. That's true. Our culture is really imitated. It is. And Mark, my husband, works in advertising. And so it's always that type of thing where the African-American community is imitated. And they know that sells, that because people like that. It is that type of cultural panache that we have that is like, ooh, they like that, you know. And it's cool to be Black. It was always cool to be Black, you know, from James Brown up till now. You know, it's just cool to be Black. And we just celebrate it. That's all. We celebrate Black Speakers Network. We celebrate Speakers Magazine. We celebrate our people. We celebrate our people. And that's why we had the NAACP Image Awards and BET Awards or whatever, because when people were getting the Grammys or whatever, there were so few. And so, you know what? We'll just create our own table. We'll go over here and we'll do our own. And then they said, well, theirs is a lot better.
But now BET isn't even owned by Black people. So like, we got some work to do to kind of right the ship. But guess what? So I have so many questions for you. I think this, number one, you're in Detroit, which is like one of the Blackest places, you know, in America, by population. And
85%.
But it also culturally is so significant. You know, again, with music and everything. So what has kept you and Mark, you know, married for, you just celebrated another anniversary not too long ago.
26 years and been together over 30 something years. I don't know how many, but yeah, over 30 years. So that's
sure. So you need to be doing like marriage seminars as well as like speaker branding and PR coaching, I think. But what has kept you in Detroit for pretty much your whole life, right?
Mm-hmm. My whole life. And it's so funny because at a certain point in time, I only was in a certain triangle. So I would be like, my high school was like in downtown Detroit. And then when I went to college, it was in downtown Detroit. And then my first job was in downtown Detroit. So I was in this one little bubble. So I went to Cass Tech, and then I went to Wayne State, and then I worked at the Detroit Free Press. And, you know, I'm just a Detroit girl. I mean, born and raised, Motown is like in my blood. And Berry Gordy, you know, growing up, we kind of saw a lot of the Motown acts where they lived and all that kind of thing. And it's family. It's like a a big Southern town almost. It's like a big Southern town because everybody knows everybody. And especially if you go to Cass Tech that has like 4,000 people in the high school, you really feel connected. I mean, it's not that you don't go visit and things like that, but for me, advertising was what I really wanted to do, advertising and PR. And I just felt I could do that because of the talent and the richness here. And I just, you know, the nonprofits here and just could do my work here. You know, I knew things could be better, but I knew I could make a difference here. So I've stayed here. I mean, I've lived in Chicago for a short amount of time. Chicago is cool, but I didn't grow up there. So I didn't know a lot of the roots about Chicago. I do know the roots about Detroit.
Absolutely. And they run really deep, really, really deep. Yeah. You said 4,000 people in your high school. That has to be like one of the biggest high schools in the country.
It is.
Like, that's like a community college or something like that.
It was huge. At the time we were like teenagers, we didn't realize it because it was like a school where everybody could go from all over the city. And so we didn't realize it, that was different because that was all we knew. And then it was like, no, this is a big school. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. This is how we run it. And it was set up like a college. So my curriculum during that time was in business, but I also worked on like the newspaper when I was at Cass, where someone else was in fashion. And then they end up going to New York, or someone else is in performing arts and they end up being in the movies, you know, or they, someone like Ed Gordon went to our high school, you know, and then he was, you know, going on and do his thing. Shauna Robinson went to Cass and she went on in TV. So it's certain things like that where it does prepare you immediately for a lot of the stuff that you're going to do in your future.
Real talk. So I think one of the things I like to kind of dive into is, because you've already thrown out a couple different terms, and it might be helpful for everyone listening, particularly if we have either newer speakers or even people that are newer to business in general, put some definitions around some of the terms that we kind of throw out and take for granted. So you focus on PR. You got background in, you know, PR, public relations. You mentioned that Mark currently works in advertising. And then we have this whole other, you know, segment of marketing. And so could you maybe define for people that are like brand new, they're like, think, because I think sometimes all three of those kind of get mashed like together. And so would you be able to just give like a rough definition for people around like the difference between PR, advertising, and marketing?
So they often under the marketing, because something has to be sold. So in order for something to be sold, you have to have marketing. Advertising is what you pay for. And then PR is what you get in terms of free, quote unquote, from the media. So in order to be known, you can run ads. Okay. And you pay for those, or you can actually get exposure through media, through a third party. So if I'm pitching you to radio, TV, or print or podcasts or things like that, that is quote unquote free because you didn't pay for that. There's a model in between called advertorials where it's half advertising and half editorial. It looks like editorial, but it's really advertising. That's a whole nother thing right now. But really, I think when people are looking for exposure, they should have a foundational things in place. So someone would come to me for PR, but only after they have their marketing systems in place, their marketing funnels in place, their digital presence in line, their branding together, then they get PR. PR won't be the magic bullet, won't be the silver bullet for solving your business problems. In order to have PR, you need to have one, you need to know who you are, who you're selling to, and you know how you can engage with people and grow and expand, because it will be like, woo, you know, like, oh my God, I got all this exposure. And then it's like your website crashed, or you don't have an email list, or you don't, people don't even know what you're selling. You're just out there looking cute. And it's like, well, what do they do? You know, it's so I always tell people, I said, PR is not for the ego. It is a part of marketing. It is for marketing. It's to sell something, to move the needle for your business. So people think PR is cute and sexy and, oh, I just want to be seen on ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox. It's like, okay, but for what? What are you trying to do? Well, I just want to be known. Known for what? What's the call to action? So it always goes back to marketing. And that's where I think a lot of people miss it. They are not as ready for PR as they think they are.
Yeah. And so what I heard is, you know, you have this top level of marketing, this umbrella. And then under marketing, you're going to have different resources, different strategies in order to drive traffic and get exposure to reach your customers. And so you said paid is pretty much advertising, and there's a lot of different channels you can advertise through. But then on the other side, you have PR, which is traditionally not paid. And then there's like a model in the middle. So for the PR side, what do you think is like the biggest thing that people kind of get hung up on? Because we do hear that a lot in PR and Black Speakers Network. And I think the consensus is that, Pam, if I can just get on TV, if I can just get on like CNN, like, or, you know, get one of those morning.
It makes me want to run. It really
well, why? Why does it make you want to? Because, I mean, if you do get on TV, granted, people are going to see you. So like, what's wrong with that like thought process?
They're not even ready for the strategy for it. So say, for instance, I've done in my career, I've done PR for like McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, the museum. There's a strategy. So when they hire me as a PR director, it's not like just to get us on TV. Like, okay, what are we promoting? What is the real angle? What is the angle for the news? And what is the angle? What is the angle for the company? Okay, so the McDonald's, obviously they want to sell hamburgers. Okay, but then we just can't say, oh, can you put us on television and in the media because we want to sell hamburgers? It's like, no, dude, that's the advertising department. Go over there. Okay. Yeah. Yep. So now we've got to figure out a hook, a story, what it is that will get them interested, and then eventually lead back to the call to action to buy hamburgers, to get people to feel a certain perception about McDonald's, to get people to feel a certain perception so they can then go to the store. Most people don't have no store. They don't even know what they're selling. You look across their social media, they're all confused. They have all these dang on Instagram things, and it's like, what are you selling? I was looking to hire someone for something, and I couldn't even find their website. Their Twitter took me to Instagram. The Instagram took me back to Facebook. Like, what is this? I can't even find a real thing. So I think the foundational things, even before it was popular with social media, PR was really used as a tool to really build business, and people had real businesses, meaning that they had an offer, something they were selling, there were services, there was a program, there was something that they were selling. Here, it's just like, I just want to be seen. And it's like, you're not even ready. I can pull up right now on, you know, so many different things where I see people that just aren't ready. They're not ready. Visually, they may be ready. Okay, I say that. Visually, they'll get out and do a brand shoot in a minute. But in terms of their back end things and their systems and how things are going to work or scale, nothing. Customer service is poor. You know, it's nothing worse than getting on television, getting all this exposure. And then you do sell some stuff and then your customer service sucks. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got to have an Olivia Pope to come in and help you with crisis management. You know, and it's like, you just had to be ready. You just really had to be ready first. Don't try to rush it. You know, grow a tribe, grow a community. There's so many different people that I can say that, you know, they think I always try to hold them back. And it's like, well, why do I need to have all this together? Well, because when the media gets in and vets you, they're going to be up your ass. All right. They're going to be up your ass and they want to know what it is that you're doing. They'll look at stuff. They'll see stuff as raggedy. They may even start expose you that this ain't really real. I mean, you know, it's just, you don't want the media to come after you when you're not ready. That's all I got to say.
That makes perfect sense to me. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I got some more very interesting questions for Pam because she's doing a lot of great stuff with speakers and has an incredible brand called Speakers Magazine, which, if you didn't know, is the official magazine of Black Speakers Network. And so we're going to get into that when we get right back. You're listening to the Black Speakers Network podcast. Hey, it's Brian Knowles. Did you know that Black Speakers Network is the world's largest and most supportive speaker development and empowerment community dedicated to amplifying the voices of Black professional speakers? Professionals in every industry realize the value of being in association with their peers in order to learn best practices needed for success. Now, you may have heard that we have a very special BSN premium membership program that's specifically designed for speakers who are ready to increase their visibility. At Black Speakers Network, we send out over 15 speaking engagements every single week to our premium members for national organizations with immediate and active need for speakers. As a BSN premium member, where you'll also be listed on our speakers directory, segmented by area of expertise to make it easier than ever for meeting planners to find and reach out to you directly. So if you're looking for ways to boost your visibility, your credibility, and consistently speak on live and virtual stages while growing your revenue, I invite you to apply now for BSN Premium Membership. Membership applications are now open and full details can be found on the application page. Go head on over and apply today at bit.ly/BSN interest. That's bit.ly/BSN interest. bit.ly/BSN interest, all one word, lowercase. Head on over now and go ahead and apply. I'll see you on the other side. And as we always say in BSN, keep speaking up because your audience awaits. All right, we are back. If you are coming back, you are listening to the Black Speakers Network podcast. And I am Brian Oles. I am joined with the one and only Pam Perry. And we are talking all about PR and really getting behind the scenes scoop as to what it actually takes to, you know, not just get exposure, but what do you do with it after it comes? And so, Pam, you mentioned that when we first started, I do remember that story because I pictured like I'm in a Dunkin' Donuts parking lot. I was always just Dunkin' Donuts on the way home. It was on a back road of where I used to live. And if you drive past the Dunkin' Donuts, there is no signal for another 15 minutes. So I knew I had to pull over in that Dunkin' Donuts to talk to you because we wouldn't have been able to talk on the phone. And so that way I always have this like kind of physical reminder, even though you weren't in person. I remember meeting you in person at PNC, but like this physical reminder of where we met. But it's been 4 years since you launched Speakers Magazine, 5 years with Black Speakers Network. And as you mentioned, it was just like an immediate connection. And so for the folks that aren't familiar, can you just share a little bit about what Speakers Magazine is and why you thought it was necessary and relevant for the time we're in now?
Well, it was like the beginning of 2017, I did my vision board. And I remember writing down all the things that I really wanted to accomplish in 2017. And one of it was a magazine. I didn't know what kind of magazine. I just had tried several magazines before, Christian magazines. I had tried Writer's Magazine. I tried different types of magazines. And they were good when they started, great ideas, and then they just flopped and they failed. And so I said, I really want to do another magazine in 2017. Really wasn't sure. And I knew it would be something around just branding people that I really enjoy interacting with, basically. Didn't know whether it was going to be authors, speakers, right, whatever. So I didn't know. So time goes on. And then I realized like in about, I guess it was about May or so, someone came to me and says, hey, I'd love to do a magazine with you. Would you be interested? And I said, were you reading my vision board? And I was like, yes. And he says, and we'll call it Speakers. And then that's when it started.
Wow.
And it just resonated. It just jumped. And I was like, oh my God. I said, I love work. It's basically authors have to speak and speakers have to write books. So one of the first things is like why every speaker should have a book was like one of the first articles that we had. And I said, I love it. And so I called the person that I knew was my mentor. And I said, George Frazier. And we launched at PNC. And I said, George, I'd like you to be the first cover. And he said, sure, of course. And that was the start of it. And George was the first cover. He really is a master speaker. And we from there, we just kind of like grew. And we just said, you know, we want to highlight speakers. It kind of evolved over time. It's digital and printed subscription. And also we mail out to like media people as well, because a lot of the people in the magazine, if we can get them in front of the media by actually physically mailing it to them, they'll see it. It's like, oh, okay, here's a subject matter expert. It's like almost like a catalog of subject matter experts. And a lot of them were my clients, and I just was trying to get them other media exposure because, like, again, traditional media, white media, they weren't really giving us exposure. So I said, you know what, let's just make sure that we do that, that we send this out. And so that's how it started. And then it became digital. And then we started embedding the videos on it and putting the videos on the website. And then now it's a positioning tool for a lot of speakers for their first part. But I just remember when we went to George's event the very first year, 2017, we had the magazines there. And it came to me and says, you know what? Let's do this for every speaker that has an event. Let's do their social media and be on the scene. Speakers Magazine, be on the scene for these events. So everybody that has an event, we're actually there on the scene with them as their publicists, because that's my first thing that I do. So that's how it came about. It's a cross between a publicist love what they do in terms of promoting, but then also editorial on the speakers that we love as well. So when they have an event, if it's Les Brown, we're at his event and we're actually doing video, we're doing social media, we're doing red carpet interviews with people that are attending to give it more legs. We promote it before, we promote it during, and then obviously we promote it afterwards on the website. So same thing with Dr. Avis and everybody. It was like, it became the thing until 2020 coronavirus, and then everything was virtual. But now we're getting back to getting to events as well. We're going back to.
But even in 2020, you haven't missed a month since you started.
Missed a month. Yeah. Just everybody was digital. Like I remember the first one that really had the main pivot was Kern Cherry, mm-hmm. and her event was to take place, and then she moved it back to May, then moved it to, you know, kept moving it back. We still did her cover, but I was going to physically be there for her event. But so we actually had to do like promotion of it digitally online. Good thing that I'm a publicist that knows his way around the internet. So we were doing screenshots and that sort of thing and tagging people and doing podcasts and all the other type of things that typically go with it. Of course, we do a big blow up cover and we send it to them so you have it and make sure it's part of your background when you're on your Zoom or whatever, like what you're doing right now.
Yeah, I love mine. Y'all can't see it, but we're going to link to Speakers Magazine. And then also we're going to link to our issue, the BSN issue that we had last year as well. Yeah. And maybe put some pictures in there because it is really, really cool. And the fact that you are consistent, the fact that you're consistently creating this every single month, to me, that's very impressive because that is a no joke work pace. That's no days off.
By the time one is put to bed, it's like you're working on the next one. And it really is, you know. And so our issue that's coming up right now, you know, is an issue. And then there's a takeover issue that's coming up too. You started that. The takeover issue is in November. You know who that one is, right? So she's doing that type of thing. That was the first time we ever did anything like that. And it was really cool because we could be at the event and actually distribute the event, be adding our tribe. I guess we have like 101,000 people that follow us on different platforms. So we're promoting the people on the magazines and in the magazine. So it's just real important just to make sure. And what's funny is that I didn't realize this, but it's so Googleable.
Yeah. And that's why I'm so impressed by, because you mentioned, I mean, some people might think, well, it's 2020. You know, why do you need like a print publication? And to your point, it's kind of like, I think there's something very, very powerful about being able to hold something in your hand, mail something to somebody, a meeting planner, and be like, hey, I'm in this magazine. So that's a very powerful thing. Yeah. But as powerful as that is, having something with like a strong digital footprint where now, because you all do such a great job on that side, if you show up in this magazine and somebody types your name, they go to find you. Because that's, I mean, most... If somebody's looking for you as a speaker or anything, author, whatever, like they're not going to your website right away. They're going to Google you like we do everything else. And, you know, your website might be at the top, but there's all this other body of work that's going to be attached to it. And that lasts forever.
Yeah. And then with it, and that's why we always require that they have a speaking reel. So people can spend all this money on their speaking reel. And so they're in Speakers Magazine, but they can also, now it's another place where their speaking reel lives. And that's really like a big part of it too, that they have their speaking reels there. And so I always tell people, I said, have your speaking reel there. So it kind of functions as a way like a speaker's bureau for them, but yes. Really it's a place for them to band together editorial wise. Then we put it out on Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of things. And we have editorial in there. Like this person here, you kind of know him as Daryl Fletcher, 3 reasons why every speaker needs a speaking reel. You know, in this short little article, but it's like, okay, it's for speakers. So it's like our trade pub, But then we also have articles in there. Like you wrote one, like, you know, before things you need to do before you quit your day job.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Just things that,
y'all better read that.
And this one is Find Your Stage. I think you wrote that one too. Building a strategy to stay consistently booked. You wrote that one as well.
I really appreciate the opportunity because I one of my goals is to actually I want to write for like Forbes and like Business Fast Company. Like I want to like write articles, and this was my first foray. I think I may have done like one Medium article like before, but Speakers Magazine was like my first opportunity to be able to do that. So that was cool.
Yep. That was cool. And you did the book. We did the Speak Up book too, remember?
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, I'm talking about like magazine print, like thing, like articles. But yes, the Speak Up book definitely is. And you actually, while we got you on the podcast, that wouldn't even have happened if it wasn't for you, because you were the one that facilitated getting Dr. Frazier as well as Les Brown a part of that project. And so I think it's all good. In fact, let's link to the Speak Up book too. And I also want to link to and the show notes for anybody listening. If you want to be in Speakers Magazine, again, it's an opportunity every single month. So it's speakermagazine.net/advertorial. And you can actually get all the information about what it takes to be in there and what that process looks like.
Please have professional pictures. Professional pictures. Please have a well-written bio at the length that the person is asking for. Please have a speaker reel. Okay. Please have a website. That's like crazy, but some people don't. And have some social media presence. That's not just like pictures of food. Okay. How about some social media view speaking?
That content. Yeah. I you know, and I'm sure you work with speakers too, because you have an entire program, Branding Accelerator, where you're working with a small cohort of pretty much hand-selected speakers, and you're really helping them go through that whole process of start to finish. So it's like, hey, what is the strategy? And then putting the actual marketing assets, the sales assets, the like all those things in place so that when they get out, as you're helping them get more visible, then we're able to monetize the traffic that's coming in.
So I find that a lot of speakers think that their only stream of income may be speaking and a book and then maybe a workbook. You know, it's like three things. And it's like, oh my God, you're not going to make a lot of money just speaking on the stage as a keynote. And so a lot of it is just like, what is your expertise? And so I can't just say, well, I'm just a motivational speaker. Okay, right. Who's going to pay for that? Or I am a leadership speaker. To who? Who's going to pay for that? So many times with the cohort and even my other program, Ready, Set, Go Speak, is just getting them ready, is that they have to understand who are they speaking to and what are they doing? What are they doing? And I talk with my business partner who does a lot of my digital marketing and things like that. And she says, why do people just really want to just be seen?
It's ego. A lot is ego. And I think also just
feel loved, feel significant. And so I have a heart for it. But then also this one, I said, the foundation of business is like, what are you selling? What problem are you solving? You talk about that all the time.
All the time. That's my number one thing.
It's like, what problem are you solving? Yeah. If you're not solving a problem, then ain't nobody going to pay for that.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And I think part of the problem is that, you know, some activity will get you stuff by like accident, but you feel like it's like, then you're doing like, there's more of that. So like, you know, I think with an absence of a business strategy, an absence of, you know, target customers, an absence of a true sense of clarity around that problem, you're going to be kind of spinning your wheels. But before we let you go, Pam, I do want to kind of circle back to the PR piece. And so, cause you've done like so much. So like, what do you feel like is like the current state of where we are? Because right now we were just talking about social media and like how under leveraged or misleveraged it is by people. I feel like And I wish people could see this like graphic. We might need to send it out. But you have like the little TV on the screen. So, but 50 years ago, the only way, like if you wanted to get in front of the at the time was probably, you know, 150 to 200 million viewer audience in the US. There were five television stations that you would have to get on, you know, and if you didn't have an end with one of those logos, and if you didn't have like a couple hundred thousand or a couple million to get in front of it, there was no way to do that. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to today, we have
so many options,
all these options. So I guess is the current state of media is obviously is changing, but in your opinion, is like, what is the relevancy of those more traditional platforms, talking about local television, cable, print media? Like, is it still even necessary to collect the logos? And if so, like, how seriously should that be balanced with everything else that you're doing?
So the media at the very beginning, so traditional radio, TV, and print, they kind of, you know, snuff their nose up at like, oh, that's just social media, right? It's like, that's just Twitter. That's just whatever. That's just a blogger. But then it became like really serious. And so now the media is working in tandem with that. So if you're watching CNN, whatever, it'll say, follow me on Twitter, right? Or Don Lemon will say, hey, I have a podcast. So they, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, is really what the media said. So what still happens is that there is a area that all journalists really try to abide by, and that's journalism ethics. And so ethics are when you vet a story, you're serving the audience based on what's best for the audience. So you have this journalism ethics. So when they are the gatekeeper, they are still the gatekeeper. So if you want to get in New York Times, or if you want to get on a local television station or whatever, you pitch them. And if it fits their audience, they allow you on. People know that that's vetted. They know that's not easy. They know when it does happen that it's obviously a choice that the media selected you, and you rise above the crop, you know. And so people will see that, and they know that that has more authority versus someone who buys advertising. You know, it's like, okay, who do you believe? Do you believe an ad, or do you believe a story? Well, most people are going to believe a story because they know it was vetted by a journalist who basically has to adhere to journalism ethics. And that's really like the main thing. I mean, you hear the, you know, I went to journalism school. So it's just this whole thing about, you know, we're like these, you know, people that are going to share the story. We're going to tell the story. We're going to tell the truth, right? Typically, those are the things. So people know that they can believe it. When you have just your own social media and your own pictures and their own Photoshop and your own words and your own copywriting, people know they're not that dumb, I don't think, that some of that stuff ain't right. Some of it ain't true. Oh, I made $1 million in a day, you know, that kind of thing. You know, you should buy my program. It's like, okay, well, a journalist will probably ask you, well, let me see the receipts. Let me see your W-2. Let me see, you know, they're going to do the investigative journalism work that's required in order for you to make those claims. You can make any kind of claims. Of course, you got FTC that'll just say, well, you know, you really can't say that. But the digital world, it's made it the wild, wild west. So people can say anything at any time. Yeah, you can attract a lot of attention. But in terms of building that know, like, and trust factor, media is still the number one thing. The bigger the media, obviously, the more trust. If you're Oprah, obviously, she has a golden touch. You get touched by Oprah and the boom, you know, everything. But she bets it so hard. She bets it. She makes those producers, they are all up your behind. I've had clients that have been on Oprah, and it's like, whew, it took like a month even after they said, we're interested.
They're doing, you know, due diligence.
They're doing a lot of due diligence. So when people are in Oprah, you know, they've been vetted. And so that really where it has a lot of weight. So a lot of times I just say, yeah, they do work in tandem. So if you are in O Daily, which is her new magazine now, her O Daily, yes, and then you can share that on social media. And that makes that ways better than you just saying about yourself on your social media.
Gotcha. And that's where so it's not like one replacing the other. It's working in tandem and, you know, figuring out a way to optimize really both.
Yeah. And find and find stories. They are looking for stories. The media is just looking for stories. They're not looking to help you sell stuff. They're looking for stories. That's one of the main things that why I do my podcast, get out there and get known, because I interview media people so they can explain, the media can explain in their own words what we're looking for. We're not trying to be your salesperson. We're looking for stories that serve our audience. That's really the key. And so when if it's Black Enterprise or whatever, they're not sounding like ads. They're sounding like real stories. So
absolutely. Well, Pam, we are out of time, but this has been an incredible conversation. We definitely got to bring you back for part two to like dive into some of these other intricacies. I so respect like what you, Mark, and the entire Speakers Magazine family have continued to put together. Like, it's always high quality. So I'm going to encourage y'all again, if you haven't seen it, make sure that you go to speakersmagazine.net. Link will be in the show notes to check it out. And Pam, if folks want to connect with you directly, whether they're speakers, meeting planners, other individuals that might need like your services, what's the best way to do that?
PamPerryPR.com. PamPerryPR.com. That's where they can find everything. That is my home. That's where I hang out. That's where I live. So I invite you to my home, PamPerryPR.com.
See how that, like, isn't it great when like the messenger is the message? So like, that's one simple, she didn't give you like 30,000 like links, like one umbrella, and then do what you got to do when you get there. So yes. Beautifully, beautifully done. So thank you again, Pam. And thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Speakers Network podcast. We will see you again next week, and make sure that you, if you like what you heard, tell somebody, don't keep it to yourself. Like, share, and subscribe. Thank you, Pam. Cool. Hey, it's Brian. Thank you for listening to the Black Speakers Network podcast. Listen, if you found this episode informative, be sure to follow us on whatever podcasting platform you find most convenient to make sure you don't miss a single episode in the future. We have lots of great information to come. Also, be sure to share this episode to other speakers so they could benefit from the same information you just heard. Now, if you are ready to take your visibility and credibility to the next level and get access to new speaking opportunities, I have an invitation for you. I'm going to go ahead and invite you to join us as a Black Speakers Network premium member. Now, if you're wondering what that is, here at Black Speakers Network, we send out multiple speaking opportunities every single week. Plus, we have a world-class team of experts ready to support you in connecting to the audience that you're called to serve. Remember, you don't have to go on this journey of building your speaking business alone. To learn more, go ahead and head over to our website at blackspeakersnetwork.com. Just click on the Join Us button and then click Apply for Membership to get started. Again, that's blackspeakersnetwork.com, www.blackspeakersnetwork.com. Speak up. Your audience awaits, and I'll see you on stage.